Worth Repeating is made possible by series sponsorship from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the first part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was inherited, stories about things that are passed down. Can you think of something that was gifted from someone else? The first storyteller is Maria Luisa Ornelius June. Mari shares a story about a sneaking suspicion she had at a very young age.
Some people talk about their ancestral roots pulling at them. Well, mine, when they came pulling at me, they pulled me all the way back to 1492, when the Spanish crown issued the Edict of Expulsion that gave Jews two options: convert to Catholicism or hit the road. Fast forward to 1978, and I'm 13 years old in Laredo at my grandmother's house for the weekly Tortilla Sunday. And Tortilla Sunday was a big breakfast spread that she made for the whole family. And it's Mexican big, not American nuclear family. So we had tios, tias, cousins. My great-grandmother, who was born in the 1890s, was there. And my grandmother would hand make, you know, a stack of flour tortillas. She would make guacamole, choriqueso, huevos rancheros. And we had just finished enjoying this huge spread, and all the kids were helping clean up while the adults had a sobremesa with a little cafecito and pan dulce while they chismeared. And I am washing the disposable plastic dishes that my grandmother had and trying to get the chorizo grease off when I hear them say, you know, we're Jewish. I was like, wait, what? We were the most devoutly Catholic family I could think of. We went to Catholic school. We went to church every Sunday. We went to confession on Saturday so that you could go to communion on church on Sunday. And it stunned me. So, you know, this is 1978. There's no Google. So in South Texas parlance, no lo podíamos googlear. And, you know, fast forward to 2011, and I've gotten married, I've had children, I've lived in different parts of the world, and I've returned to the United States. And my mother-in-law enjoyed genealogy. So she was going to a conference in Salt Lake City, and she said, is there something that you want to know about your family? And I'm like, oh, why, yes. And so she comes back a week later, gives me a family tree, and she gives me an excerpt from a graduate student dissertation from UCLA. And it was entitled, Chicano Jews of South Texas. I'm like, oh, that's the first piece of evidence I've gotten that this is true. So again, fast forward to 2019, and I hear that the Spanish government will grant citizenship to people who can prove their Sephardic ancestry. So I called up a rabbi, and I worked with some genealogists, and I jumped through all the hoops, and I got my citizenship. But the thing that really set me back on my heels is I found out that not only did we have Jewish ancestors, but that two of them were burned at the stake in Las Canarias, by the office of the Inquisition, because they were Judaizing. They were Jewish. They were practicing their faith. And shortly after that, the pandemic started, so it gave me time to reflect on my ancestry. And I remembered a story from when I was 4 years old, and my tía Amparo died. She was a caretaker at one of the missions here, and at the house, we were made to put cloths over all the mirrors. We couldn't listen to music. And I was 4 years old, and I'm like, what are we doing? And they're like, eso es luto, that's mourning. Well, now that I know this story, I'm like, that's Shiva. And so, you know, I remembered, again, being in first grade and hearing about the Christians being fed to the lions. And I was so shocked, I threw up at school. So I came home and I told my dad what happened, and he was commiserating, and he said, you know, when I was young, I was worried about the Inquisition. At that time, it didn't make sense to me. I was 6 years old. But in retrospect, well, he was having this epigenetic fear response to our ancestry. And, you know, it makes sense because it was horrific ancestry. Good in that I survived, but it was hard, the things that they went through. And I wondered then, what did they do so that I could be here today? So that we survived. And I thought of another story. I was in middle school, and I was talking with friends, and I said, Asina, instead of Asi. Oh, my father and grandfather immediately scolded me. And they're like, you sound ignorant. Okay. Well, I come to find out that the word Asi is Spanish for the Ladino word Ancina. So Asina is a bastardization of Ancina. Ancina comes from Ladino, and that was the language of the Sephardic Jews of Spain. So I was getting this ancestral generational scolding so that I wouldn't sound Jewish. They framed it so that I would, you know, come across as Spanish. But they had to do something to let us hide in plain sight. And there were little things like that that happened to us. And so now when I look at my ancestry and I look at my culture, when I see the tortilla, the flour tortilla, I'm like, that's the pita of North America. And, you know, none of this has made me change my mind about leaving my Catholic faith. But I really appreciate all that my ancestors did so that I could be here today. So on a Friday evening when the sun is setting, at the beginning of Shabbat, I light two candles. And then I serve myself a little sip of tequila. And I raise a toast to my ancestors. Pa' todos los haters that didn't want us here, l'chaim. Thank you.
L'chaim indeed. Cheers to embracing a bit of your history. Worth Repeating returns this fall, and I want to hear from you. Take some time and tell us what you thought of this past season. Suggest some themes for next year, or maybe just give us our flowers. Visit tpr.org/WR and fill out the survey today. Not a survey guy or gal? You can shoot me an email directly at worthrepeating@tpr.org.
This program was made possible with support from the 80/20 Foundation, striving to transform San Antonio by issuing grants to public charities that attract, grow, and retain San Antonio's future workforce. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Marcy Trevino Ripper. Marcy shares a story about dealing with a paper mess in the wake of a loss.
So, I have a story about the mess I inherited. It started in 2022. My aunt passed away on my birthday, no less. And she was married to my uncle, and they had a beautiful marriage. They built this beautiful home together in the mountains. So needless to say, he was really lonely. And he was a military man, so he was very disciplined. And so he just kind of used that discipline and just, like, took the loneliness with him through life. But wouldn't really admit it to himself. And so it was really sad to see him going through that. And it made him susceptible to a lady that we now call the pirate hooker. And what I mean by that is she was a blonde, big-boobed, short, petite woman who kind of weaseled her way in pirate style. And that's a story I'm excited to share with y'all today. So she started messaging my uncle pretty vulgar messages on Facebook. She, like, literally slid into his DMs at 63. I didn't know y'all did that. But He, you know, fell for it. He was super lonely, and he was by himself. He lived in a different state than our family, and it kind of spiraled really fast out of control. She was an addict, and so she was a heavy drinker, and she influenced his drinking. He was no saint. He had his own struggles with alcohol, and it just escalated with her. They were a pretty toxic pair. So one night, they are driving down a dark mountain road after drinking. Right? Shouldn't have been driving. And she asked to be let out. She asked to be let out of the car. This dark mountain road. They got in a fight. She wanted out. He stopped and let her out. He went on. She never showed back up anywhere, so he went to look for her. Well, she had fallen in the road this way, and he ran her over. And didn't see her, you know, dark mountain road. She was very inebriated. He was too. Horrible accident. Police get called. He gets arrested. She goes to the hospital. We hadn't talked to him in months. He cut us out because we were disapproving of said pirate hooker. And and so we, a family member ends up driving cross state lines to bail him out. He didn't have anyone else. He had cut a lot of friends off because of it all. And he admits to this family member that bailed him out, like, this lady ruined my life. I just miss my wife. Like, I don't know how I'm going to come back from this. He was facing a felony charge at that time. So it was not looking great. My uncle drops him off. My other uncle, the family member that bailed him out, drops him off, goes to check on him the next day, and my uncle committed suicide. So now this is the second loss in that year, 7 months later. I come to find out I'm the executor of the estate. I'm the family attorney, so it made sense why I got appointed, and I knew what to do because I had done probate and estate planning law in the past, and I quickly kind of used the practicalities of it all to just kind of start moving in one direction. And we plan him this beautiful memorial about a month later after his passing. I get home from that, and I get served with a lawsuit from said pirate hooker. And she was suing for personal injury, and rightly so. I mean, she was pretty severely injured. I got it. As an attorney, I got it. But it still sucked. It meant that I needed to rev up a defense of that suit because we couldn't kind of let the estate completely dissolve at that, at the hands of her and that injury suit because, you know, they're asking for tons of money. So I hire a bunch of attorneys, me being one myself, my husband actually as well, and we do the best we can. We end up settling that lawsuit. And in the midst of all that, I find out 8 days before this accident happened, my uncle made her a beneficiary on an investment account, pretty significant investment account. So now I sue her for what's called undue influence, basically arguing that she influenced him to make the change with that malintent. And so now I'm facing another lawsuit. I'm the one bringing that lawsuit. We end up settling it. So we settle everything. We are able to salvage as much of the estate as we can. It was a pretty significant estate. My aunt and uncle worked really hard. They didn't have children, so the nieces and nephews, me being the oldest, were their babies. That and, of course, pets. They had pet babies. One is here in San Antonio to this day. We're able to start liquidating all the assets and start kind of wrapping up the estate. And so hindsight, looking back now, I'm kind of starting to really process and realize that in a way I'm grateful she got out of the car, because if she hadn't, she probably would have weaseled her way into more and we would have never seen our uncle again, and everything my aunt and uncle built, we would have just never, ever been a part of. So yes, I inherited this mess, but I call it a bittersweet mess at this point. Additionally, this beautiful mountain home they built, we got to spend a couple years taking our family up there, and every family member kind of had their own time in the house, and it was beautiful. We got snowed in the last time we were there. My kids thought it was so cool. My husband, not so much. Again, bittersweet. Additionally, my sister and my nephew, my cousins, were able to inherit some financially. We never, ever thought that would be possible at our generation. I'm a first-generation college graduate, so my husband and I are like hustling to do that for our kids, and now to kind of be a beneficiary of that is, again, bittersweet. And then the biggest lesson I think I've learned from this all, and this is just managing the estate over the last 2 years, but even bigger picture for me, I've had eight losses, pretty big losses in the last 7 years. So my counselor calls this compounding grief. And I've started to write about this a little and kind of process it more. This has been a really great mechanism to do that as well. But a really good friend of mine pointed out, Marcy, you've got compounding resilience. And that to me is probably the biggest bittersweet takeaway from this entire story. So thank you.
Never trust a pirate hooker that slips into your DMs.
This program was made possible by the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, striving to enrich the quality of life of San Antonio residents and visitors by creating art programming and helping people experience art. For this and more information, visit getcreativesanantonio.com.
Our next storyteller is Gabby Gonzalez. Gabby shares a story about the love she has for San Antonio and who gifted her this affinity.
So, I inherited my love of San Antonio from my dad. Mario Gonzalez was my dad's name. My sister and I lovingly called him Papa Bear, and a lot of his friends called him the Dancing Bear because that man knew how to dance, and the ladies at the club loved him for it. So my dad loved dancing and singing. His favorite tunes were the Hanul tunes. His favorite was Jay Bedez, and he loved us. Me and my sister were his everything. He literally spent all of his time with us. And a lot of the times that we spent with my dad were actually talking about the south side of San Antonio, because that man loved the south side because that's where he grew up. And all things San Antonio, that man loved to talk about. So we grew up on the south side, but we also moved to the north side for a little bit because that's where he was working at the time. And we would take plenty of trips back to the south side to visit with family and go to some of our favorite spots, in particular flea markets. We were a flea market family. So Poteet Flea Market on Sundays, the Centennial Flea Market was one of our favorites. They had lots of great shopping and food and the music in the air. Like, it was such a vibe. I'm so sad it doesn't exist anymore. But we would also go to some of our favorite spots to eat, like Bud Jones, anybody? Bud Jones? So Bud Jones is just a nostalgic spot for me. You'll still catch me there every once in a while. So a little short story on Bud Jones. So they have this all-you-can-eat special, and my dad would actually get the all-you-can-eat special. And one thing about that, you're not supposed to share, by the way, but I was so indecisive. I couldn't figure out if I wanted the chicken fried steak or the fish. But he would let me live my surf and turf dreams and hook me up with a piece of fish. Shh, don't tell anybody, but Jones, if you're watching, no, he didn't. But I loved that about him. And one of my fondest memories was actually going to a beautiful park that still exists here. So if you've never been to Espada Park on the south side, highly recommend. It's gorgeous. We would go as a family and go pick up some snacks at the corner store and head over to Espada Park and just eat our snacks and look at the beautiful nature and people watch. And there's this little part where you can actually like go over the water. I don't know if it exists anymore, probably if it's heavy rain, but you can go over the water. And my dad would go over the water really slow and let us open the doors as we were looking at the water. Just simple little moments like that, right? But anytime we were on the south side, he was always pointing out places. Look, I went there. I did this. I did that. That's where my friend lived. This and that. He would tell us a story of when he went to Morrill Elementary, and it was right across the way from La Fiesta on Flores. And his dad actually worked there for many, many years. So he would point out from his window of his classroom and say, look, that's my dad pushing in the carts. He was so proud of his dad, and I thought that was so cute. And he also mentioned that my grandma was actually a tour guide at the missions when she was like 13 or 14, and she would wear a cute little Mexican dress and tell people about the history of San Antonio. And I was like, that's so cool. I feel like he got the love of San Antonio from his mom, and then I inherited that love from him. It's just so awesome the way that that worked. So I ended up starting my Instagram page talking about San Antonio, mostly the places that I grew up going to, a lot of places on the South Side. And it started doing really well. My dad was so proud of me. My family was so proud of me. But my dad would tell everybody, you have to follow my daughter's blog. And I'm like, Dad, it's not a blog. It's just Instagram. But I appreciate the support anyway. So that was so cute. He would tell everybody to follow me. And I thought that was just, he was just so proud that I was talking about the city that he loved so much. And my TikTok actually started blowing up after the pandemic. A lot of videos started blowing up, and I was being recognized for showcasing amazing local businesses. And KSAT actually reached out, and they were like, we want to do an interview with you. And I was so excited because as a San Antonian, getting recognized by KSAT, are you kidding me? That is so cool. So I was like really excited, told my whole family, and of course they were so excited for me. So I did the interview, and my dad worked not too far away from where I was doing the interview. And I was so excited to actually go and tell him, like, after the interview was done, all about it. So I did. I finished the interview. I had it at one of those local mom and pop shops that I love. And we talked about San Antonio and why I was doing it. And they were telling me how much of an impact I made on these local businesses. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So I went to tell my dad all about it. And he was so excited. He was like, I can't wait to see it. And unfortunately, he fell ill. I took him to the hospital. And he never made it out of the hospital. So he didn't get to see my interview. He didn't get to see anything that I've accomplished. At least I don't think he has. But if he has, if he's seeing it, I hope that whoever he's meeting, wherever he is, he's also telling them to follow my blog or to tell people to follow my blog. And honestly, I think everybody here should follow my blog. Do it for my dad. Do it for my papa. It's Siempre San Antonio on Instagram and TikTok. And everything that I do, talking about San Antonio, the cumbias that I dance to, the Tejano songs that I sing at karaoke, the flea markets that I go to, and all of the amazing businesses that I showcase, I do it in his honor. Thank you.
It's my belief that your father remains incredibly proud of you, Gabby. Thank you for sharing. Worth Repeating relies on supporters like you. Supporting your favorite programs is important now more than ever. I ask you every show, and now I'm asking you every podcast. If Worth Repeating is a program that you turn to with fidelity, consider becoming a new or increasing your sustaining membership. You can do so by visiting tpr.org and clicking the red donate button today. You can leave a personalized note and tell them Tori said, meow, 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 meow.
This program is made possible by the Lifshutz Foundation, an arts, culture, and humanities fundraising organization.
Our next storyteller is Diane Garcia. Diane shares a story about exploring her roots while reconnecting with someone close to her.
So my mom is an immigrant twice over, but she would never call herself that. She was born in Ecuador, to a very well-to-do Catholic family. And she came here when she was 16, already married and pregnant. A few years after that, several things happened. She found herself divorced with two kids and really nothing to her name. She decided to stay here in the U.S. and go back to school. She, at school, met my dad, who's from here. And a few years after that, they had moved to New Jersey with my two half-brothers and had me. So by the time I was born, she had already been in the U.S. for 10 years and had really assimilated. At that time, it was seen as a good thing for immigrants to blend in. You didn't want to stand out. You know, we were just at that time coming out of the era when kids were beaten in school for speaking in Spanish. And she really wanted me to be just like everyone else. So she only spoke to us in Spanish at home. And I think also she, I think because of the hard things that she had experienced when she first got here, those years of struggle, she really wanted to put her past behind her. So she never talked to me about her culture, her past, her upbringing. And I think also like the disillusionment of the promises that she had felt like she had as a kid, and then everything that happened, she just rejected it. And especially Catholicism, she was like an adamant atheist, still is. And she really brought me up very strongly to believe that people who believe in God are fools. She also very much believed it was common in Latin American culture at that time. It still really is today to think of lighter skinned people, people of European descent instead of indigenous descent as superior. She very much still carries that with her as kind of a remnant of her childhood. So she thinks of herself as a white European. she hates it if I call her brown, but like when I look at her and when I look at me, like that's what I see. And I think that's what you would see, but that's all I'm going to say on that topic because she's going to watch this. So for all of these reasons, I didn't have a context for being a child of an immigrant. I didn't have language around that. I didn't have pride around my heritage growing up. I just thought that we were like everybody else, that we were just your totally middle of the road, middle class, New Jersey suburban family. And of course, we were different. I didn't know it at the time. You know, we'd have dinner at 10 or 11 at night most nights. She cooked all kinds of Ecuadorian foods, seco de chivo and ceviche. She'd sometimes bring home a cow's tongue and cut it up and cook it for us. And we would we would celebrate on New Year's Eve. In Ecuadorian tradition, you burn a straw man to send out the old year. So we would do that every year. And I even went to visit Ecuador when I was a kid because my abuelito was dying. But I knew so little at the time that I actually thought abuelito was his name. It took me a long time to realize that. So you know, there were kind of like all these pieces of the puzzle, but I never really put them together. My parents' marriage was also difficult. They divorced. And when I was 9, my mom told me she was moving to England. She had met a man at work from England and decided that she really wanted to pursue that relationship. And she left, and I stayed here with my dad, and I visited every year a couple of weeks, you know, less as I got older. We talked on the phone occasionally, but I basically had to do the rest of my growing up without her, and I never got to know her as the person that I was becoming, and that was hard. I mean, I think abandonment is the right term for how I felt, and I wondered, in a way that a kid should never have to, if my mom actually loved me. And I wondered, too, if I could love her after that. So 35 years later, she is still in England, still married happily to the same guy. That was the one. And I am in Texas. I have a family. I have 2 kids. And I'm a pastor, which is... like another story for another day. But as a pastor, I started to work with immigrant families because there's lots of families coming through San Antonio from other countries, and actually eventually planted and still lead my own church serving the immigrant community here. And very quickly, I realized that my high school Spanish was not going to serve me, that I needed to improve. So I started to, you know, go on Duolingo. I looked into some online classes. I was clicking on my phone. I did that for a few months. And then one day, it just hit me that I knew someone who was a native Spanish speaker. So I reached out to my mom, and we started to talk over Zoom because it was the pandemic, 3 or 4 times a week. And she would send me these exercises and correct them for me. And we'd read books in English and translate them to Spanish and vice versa. And I would send her my sermons in English. And she would spend hours translating into Spanish for me. And it was great. She was super insightful because she actually had all this like biblical knowledge from when she was a kid. so it was really, really helpful. And she still helps me with my sermons today, like 150, 200 sermons later. She's still helping me with that. And, you know, as part of that, we were doing these exercises in language, but had all these conversations too about all the things you talk about in church and in books. We talked about life and community and family and struggle and just conversations that we had never had before. And at some point she brought out this book, this box of letters that my abuelito, her father, had written to her when she had first come here to this country. And she had not opened that box since before I was born. And she started to read them to me, and I started to learn about him too through that and her early experiences here and how difficult it was. And it's all just been like this resurrection in our relationship. And now she calls me hijita and I call her mamita. And a couple of years ago, we were together in person and she said, "I love you." And I don't remember her ever saying that to me before. I mean, maybe she did and it just didn't hit, you know, but I knew it was true for the first time. I knew that I didn't wonder anymore if she loved me. I knew that she did. And I knew that I loved her too. And she would call all of that a series of coincidences. And I would call it God. But one way or another, this inheritance that I had opened this door between us and allowed us to have this relationship and allowed me to do all these things and help all these people and plant this church that I never could have done without her. And this inheritance, you know, I'd been carrying it around with me all this time and I didn't know what it was and I didn't even know it was there. And then one day it changed my life. Thank you.
Regardless if it's coincidence or God, you found your way to each other, which is a beautiful thing. That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Stay tuned for part two of the live event on the theme Inherited, streaming everywhere you stream podcasts coming soon. Worth Repeating is made possible by the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.